Welcome to the Profit Talks podcast, hosted by the Orange County Inland Empire SBDC Network, funded in part by the U.S. Small Business Administration and the California Office of the Small Business Advocate. This show is the go-to resource for business owners seeking empowerment, education, and resources to succeed. Join us as we connect you with experts, share the triumphs of fellow entrepreneurs, and reveal the wealth of assistance available to you today to level up your business. So let's go. Let's dive in and learn more. And boy, what are we going to learn today? We're going to learn about the Internet of Things. We're going to learn about what it's like to do business in Korea. And we're going to talk to somebody who's done both. We're going to talk with our guest today here, Nigel Jay, the CEO and founder of Linkworks, right here in Orange County. Welcome to the show.
Hey, Paul. Thanks for inviting me.
He was so excited to be here. Now he's so laid back. He's so relaxed here. We're going to talk, maybe it is just an ordinary day for you, but for me, it's a special day because you get to talk about two of the things I'm fascinated with, which is this growing world of the Internet of Things, and we'll explain that and talk about that, and then how that a company based here can do business with companies in other countries like Korea. So both of those, I'm fascinated by the import-export opportunities that I think most businesses overlook, and I'm fascinated by the future of technology, which everybody says is the Internet of Things. So let's define what that is, the Internet of Things. You're deeply enmeshed in this world. I'll take my whack at it, and then you tell me where I'm wrong.
Okay.
It seems everything is going to be connected to the Internet. My refrigerator, my toaster, my TV, my, I don't know, everything, not just my computers. And I have this fantasy that someday somebody's going to show up at my door and say, hi, I'm here to fix your refrigerator. I say, I didn't call anybody. Oh, no, the refrigerator called me. It's the compressor's going out, and it communicated with our factory, and we dispatched somebody to fix it. I'll go, oh, okay, it's right over there. No, we know where it is. They'll walk in, and they'll talk to the refrigerator. I'll say, okay, fine. Is it that crazy? Is that far-fetched? Is everything from certainly cars, and I already see, I used to say refrigerator is a joke. Now the refrigerator is connected to the Internet, many of these new ones here. Is everything going to be connected to the Internet?
Yes, absolutely. and your example isn't too far-fetched, except maybe, I don't know that they'll dispatch a service person. Right now, they are already dispatching alerts to your email regarding your washing machine, your refrigerator, and certain home appliances. So the answer is yeah.
If everything is connected to the Internet, then people like you have to emerge because somebody has to figure out, not just embed the Internet connectivity, the little whatever it is, it's going to connect to your router, your system, or whatever here. But somebody, as it gets more complicated, and now we're going to go up 100 miles over the air here and look at big things, giant operations. We had somebody here talking about how they were setting up a factory, and the example they used was Revlon. So all these little conveyor belts and these little cartridges, and some machine shoots the goop in the lipstick, and it has to, and then another one moves, and the little mechanical arm shoots some more goop in and does it, and somehow it measures it and caps it. And all this stuff doesn't just have to operate robotically in the house. It's got to connect all this to the somebody else somewhere else because they want to make sure it's working, it's operating, they're measuring it, they're monitoring it, and they're probably not just sitting there on the line pushing a button making all this happen. And it's probably not being monitored just in-house, but somewhere else. Is that true?
That's absolutely true. Yeah, what you're speaking about is advanced automation where, you know, or industrial automation, which is, let me go back a little bit here. So we have several clients in the mid-market enterprise space.
Get you a little closer to the microphone there, or you can move the microphone a little closer to you.
We have several clients in the mid-market enterprise space, and their key, at this day of competition, if they can grind out another 5%, 10% off of operating margins, that's a big deal.
Yeah.
And it's worth the investment. So we're seeing factories, we're seeing manufacturing plants start to incorporate some of these IoT technologies to measure key components during the production line, whether it's the final yield, like in this case Revlon and their lipstick, or something along the line, such as the motor that's pushing, that's making the lipstick, or the bin that's stirring it,
Right.
Using your example.
And then it comes down to these are critical operations that can't go down. Somebody's got to be monitoring it in real time. And you would think they're sitting there on the line, but they're probably not. Maybe they are. But somebody else is monitoring this, and maybe they're subbing it out to some company that monitors all this. And they start to see not just it stop, but, ooh, look at that motor is getting a little worn out. Look at this is slowing down something. They're trying to predict and get there before it breaks.
Yep.
Or if it does break, it doesn't have to stop. Somebody flies there and starts to crawl around with a flashlight and see what's wrong with it here.
Oh, absolutely. Any disruption to production is costly beyond most of what we would see. And you brought up predictive. That's in the last 2 years, we're seeing many of our enterprise clients start to move towards some type of predictive maintenance.
Yes.
Not predictive maintenance. Predictive, yeah.
They want to get it before it breaks.
Yeah.
So they're predicting, we're like an aircraft. We've already used so many miles. We've done the analysis. We've tracked it over time. This part probably gets so much time. Maybe it'll exceed it. Maybe it won't make that there. But by and large, it's time to take that motor apart.
Yes. And we've evolved from preventative maintenance, where we just do scheduled ABC actions, into predictive maintenance. So we're using intelligence to tell us, if we continue on this route, will this motor fail in 1 year, 6 months, 3 months?
Right.
And we can plan for
the cost and the disruption and everything else here.
Yeah.
And then, all right, so we've got part of it is we're operating it. Part of it is we're keeping it up and operating. Part of it is we're inspecting it, monitoring. We're trying to get the most, tweak it constantly in real time.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, we don't want the data to get out, the bad guys to get this stuff, to disrupt it, to steal it, to do something to it. So it's got to be encrypted more and more, and somebody's got to do all that. And then, I don't know, all this is something you guys get involved in, but then somehow, this is what fascinates me. We did a show with a company a couple of years ago on Terry's, and they were talking about they just made these little routers, as I was telling you. And sometimes it's the littlest part that makes the whole thing blow. What was it that made the space shuttle blow up years ago? Wasn't it
an O-ring?
An O-ring.
Yeah.
That was a little tiny O-ring, or maybe it was a big O-ring, but it was the cheapest, littlest part on the whole complicated machine, and it shrunk in the cold, and boom, up goes the whole rocket. So is it that? Is that part of it? I'm trying to, if it does blow up, if it does stop, if it does break, somebody's got to go and rip this whole thing apart and find out that little tiny piece that's missing. Like maybe it was just the router just broke, or a rat ate through the line or something like that.
No, you're absolutely right, Paul. And these systems can start from very simple and rudimentary to extremely complex, on the system you're trying to build. And obviously the more complex, the more pieces of hardware you have in them. There's not just the gateway or the router. You have switches, sometimes you'll have edge computing hardware. There's a lot of equipment.
And that was fascinating, too. Talk about that a little bit. That was part of the puzzle I hadn't heard. I thought they just all gathered this stuff, and there's some dumb node that just collects it all. I say dumb. It has limited capability, and it sends it to somebody else and down to computer. And you're saying, not always today. They're trying to decide. They're on the spot, on the edge. They're trying to calculate some of this and see, what do we need to send them? Everything else is okay. We don't need to send them all this data over and over again if it's all okay. Let's just send them the data that indicates there's a problem.
Yeah, so I'm going to back up a little bit and go back into automation as a whole, and then I'll get right to yours. Is that okay?
Yeah, okay. Please.
Okay, so automation as
you're a whole. You're the expert. I'm trying to tell you what I gathered from doing all these years of shows on this stuff here.
Yeah, thank you for that claim, but really my clients are the expert. this is all somewhat osmotic, my knowledge base here. So
soaking it up through others here, osmosis here.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah. Automation is simply to try to automate rudimentary, repetitive product processes. And so let's evolve in terms of industrial automation to not just automating these repetitive processes, but now we're trying to gather intelligence out of it. So some of the intelligence we're gathering would be the measurement, the inputs, the value, not the value, but the weights of the inputs, the volume of the inputs, the quality of the inputs. Using Revlon, for example, would be something that would be some wax and color that goes into the lipstick. Now, that's all fine and dandy. Now, we're going to capture all this through IoT and send the information. Here's what we have. Here's what we see in stage one. We're seeing a loss of 0.1% of the inputs. We're seeing the motors working at 98% efficiency. All these things are being sent. And historically, they would pass all of the data through whatever gateway or router they have. That's a lot of data.
Yeah.
It's a lot of data which doesn't show a lot of change. So the latest thing we're seeing is a demand in what's called edge computing, where we have smart routers and smart gateways, which are technically called edge computers, at the, if you will, the edge of the enterprise. In other words, the portion that is between the actual production to where you send it off to the internet.
On-site somewhere, there's something gathering the data before it goes out. And
yeah,
it decides.
It's all on-site.
It decides, we'll just store this. This is fine. But this, they need to see this in the other side of the world here.
They do it even one step more. There's programs that determine what is sent, what is not sent. But they will even do some computation on the edge, relieving the computational resources at the server. They effectively send data that is useful, time-sensitive, and, I mean, it's critical to the operation.
I'm going to give you another crazy example I think fits into what you're discussing here. There's a company in the building where UCI's Beale Applied Innovation Center, and they were explaining to me what they do. It has something to do with taking high-resolution images up in space. Satellite goes up, shoots this little package out, and it does something. It takes a picture of, I don't know, the United States. And sends data back and whatever they're trying to measure, monitor weather patterns or something else. And it used to take everything that that camera saw got sent back down. And I'm like, that's a huge amount of data because it's really high res and it's really a huge thing. So they started saying, what can we separate out? The outline of the United States, that doesn't change. So maybe we can subtract that data and some other parts that we recognize. So they're limiting. The camera sees everything, and then they're telling the camera, I don't need to see everything. Just show me what we're looking for, that infrared spectrum, that something that indicates a change in weather pattern or
something. That's exactly it, Paul. It is literally filtering out the key information and sending that out. It's also calculating what needs to be calculated at the edge and sending that critical information.
Right.
That's exactly it.
So I thought, wow, okay, their whole deal is how to do this and write that software. All right, so that's the world that you're playing in. What is it you do in that world?
We have a very simple component. We simply act as the medium. We transport the information from these IoT gateways and routers to the internet. So we are the internet connection. Mm-hmm. We provide connectivity.
And I always thought that would just be the big AT&Ts or whatever, whoever's running all these fiber systems and stuff. But you're saying maybe not. They got fixed programs, and you're somebody that can come in and provide more of a managed service and can massage it to more what they're doing and measure it and monitor it and maybe even, God forbid, do an audit to make sure AT&T is not overcharging you dirty rats. And sorry, AT&T, but anyway.
Yeah, so I'm going to go back just a step and explain what a standard IoT ecosystem looks like.
Okay.
And the role that we play in it. We usually will provide a slide since it's easier to see it graphically, but I'm going to break it into five components.
Okay.
And then I'll use a very simple example that everyone's used to. So the five components of a standard IoT system would be what we're trying to measure, otherwise that we're referred to as the asset. The second
thing, assembly line or something.
Yeah, whatever it is, the motor, the machine. The second thing then would be the sensor or the group of sensors that are gathering the data, that's doing the measurement.
Attached to that thing, gathering something.
Yep, so the sensors and then the gateway or the router. This third component then is we need to send this data that is somewhere remote at a factory somewhere. So it needs to touch the internet. It can be touched by either wire, which is fiber or broadband, or wireless, which would be LTE or 5G. So we call that the transport. Now this data finally arrives at some remote server, generally in the cloud. So it hits the server, and the server does what it needs to do. It runs through the program. It does the computation. Finally, the fifth stage is the presentation or the visualization of this information. So that
Which ain't easy, because every CEO goes, okay, what does that mean?
Yeah, exactly. So we'll just call that a dashboard. So again, we have the asset, the sensor, the transport, the server, and then the dashboard. So the easiest example we provide is Apple AirTags. Everyone knows what an Apple AirTag is. Everyone knows what it does.
Right.
So
attach it to your luggage or something here.
So we'll attach it to an asset. Yeah, the luggage, the purse, the dog, the cat. So the asset is the dog, the cat, the purse, the luggage. The sensor is the AirTag. The transport, since it's Apple, is going to be LTE or 5G. It all does everything wireless. And that's the role we play. We play in that transport portion. Now,
You set up the contract for that? You set up the how much data is transmitted and what they charge me and how it works?
We do. Let me just finish the model real quick, and I'll come right back to that, if that's okay.
Yeah.
To finish up the model, so then the data is sent from the AirTag, cellular, then it hits some computer server, in this case the Apple server, and is presented in a manner that is easily digestible, so like a daytime location. So the presentation would be a map. So that's the dashboard.
There it is.
Yep. So that's the simple model.
But you're really focusing on just the transport of that data.
We just focus on the transport. We provide LTE, 5G connectivity. Our clients range from small business, small farmers, all the way up to mid-market and enterprise.
And it isn't just acting as an insurance agent. You're going to go out and get different quotes and look at different systems and figure out what's the best way to transport this data for your client. But then you're going to customize it and you're going to monitor it and make sure they're getting what they said. And because otherwise, they got to do it. They got to manage this relationship.
The answer is yes and yes. So you brought up 3 points. So yes to all three. So the data is only provided by the major carriers. So it's either going to be AT&T, Verizon, T-Mobile, and some of the more local carriers. They own the networks. We are partners to where we repackage that data. We buy it wholesale. We repackage it. We'll mix and match. And the value that we add to enterprise, and then I'll talk about the value we add to small business, the value we add to enterprise, we take away the labor of trying to assess and audit what is the right amount of data that we need for this enterprise. And how do we maintain these costs to a somewhat consistent cost going forward?
Otherwise, your bank's from one size fits all, and you're trying to fit yourself into it.
Exactly. They'll have multiple one size fits alls. And I think the example we talked about earlier is, let's say Revlon uses 660 megabytes of data across their enterprise, but AT&T or Verizon will offer them a mix and match between 250 megs and 1 gigabyte. So it becomes somewhat messy.
They're paying for too much, they're paying for too little, and who knows what you're getting in the end. Do you know how to audit this stuff? No. You just trust that's really what they're giving you, and how much am I using, and is there a better way to dial this in?
And there is a better way, and we have it. So for this example, for Revlon, if they have only 10 devices that they're transporting data, that's easy. But if they have 1,000, 10,000, this becomes a mess, right?
Yeah.
We would then actually create a plan that is unique to just Revlon and just call it Revlon.
And feel free to call us Revlon if you want for this free ad. Yeah. We're using you in the example here. But that happened to be one that Antares installed a router at some Revlon factory, and they were talking about it.
Yeah, and Revlon, if you want to talk to us, it's LINKWORX.
X.
We'll do this for you. We'll do this for you, yeah.
Because there's 10,000 sensors in their factory here, and each of them has to have they cumulatively have a collective data plan for all these little sensors, some of which send a lot, some of which send a little, some of which send continuously, some of them send them randomly.
Exactly. So as I was saying, so if it gets to 10,000 of them, it's hard to manage. So we will actually create a plan that is unique to Revlon. And the key benefit here is it's likely not going to go over, because we'll create one that is that works for them.
Big penalties if you guess wrong, and overpayment if you're over. I would think most people overguess. That's what I do half the time.
They overguess by too much, actually. Yeah, they overguess by too much. So we'll create this plan, and then from finance standpoint, they have a consistent cost going forward. There's very little fluctuation. It stays within a very narrow margin. And the audit is still available to them, but most of our clients don't do it because the financial...
Because an audit's expensive. It's difficult. Time-consuming.
If you're expecting to spend $1,000 or $10,000 and you spend $10,000 as expected, you generally don't audit that once a year. But we make life just a little easier for our enterprise clients.
Managed services. I hear this more and more. Whether it's the copier or some other, there's some part of my puzzle, particularly a complex organization, and you just take it over, manage it for me.
We'll take it over. We'll offload that burden. They're not the experts. We are. There's no point trying to teach them how to learn all this stuff.
Right.
We already have it.
The
have
fine points
team.
Of data transmission here. All right. So all that's what you do, and you do this for mostly small to mid-size, or you do this for big enterprises, or all of that?
Across the board, our sweet spot tends to be mid-market and enterprise.
Okay. Now, All that you do here in Southern California, right? You're based in Orange County or somewhere?
Based in Orange County. We have a remote operation. Operations are in Texas, and the networking, the tech side and sales is in California.
Okay. Now, one day you wake up and say, we're mostly a U.S.-based business. We do, most of our clients are just U.S.-based companies, right?
Correct.
And you said, maybe we should look overseas. Why look at Korea, and why participate in this recent SBDC, what are we going to call it, trade mission, trade trip here?
Paul, this comes with a story. So if you indulge
me, I love stories.
If you will indulge me, let me start this whole thing. One day I receive a call from Roger Lloyd at the SBDC.
Shout out to Roger. I know Roger well.
Roger's a great guy. So I get a call sometime Friday morning, and he says, Nigel, you need to jump on this call at noon. Of course, I had plans. I told Roger I had a lunch appointment. And he goes, no, you need to be on this call. He didn't tell me anything about the call.
You
he just said,
there.
You have to be on the call. Finally, after some prying, Roger divulges, we're planning a trade mission to Korea.
Yeah.
Is this something that you can sell? Can you export there? I wasn't sure, but it was enough to catch my attention, so I did rearrange my schedule and jumped on the call. Manal was the presenter. And after some...
Shout out to Manal, who runs the Import-Export Center, whatever, the World Trade Center, whatever, for the SBDC, and who is organizing this trip, who came in and talked about it beforehand here.
Oh, Manal's amazing. Mike Daniels is amazing. Roger
runs the whole network,
amazing.
Right? You're rattling off all the big names here.
Yeah, they're just amazing people with resources to make things, move those needles. So we sat on that webinar or that Zoom call, and I talked to my staff. We came up with the notion that our contracts and market are basically U.S.-based.
Right.
So we can't really export. But South Korea, being one of the largest, or rather an emerging, very tech-intensive.
From cars on down and everything.
Yeah. Tech-intensive. Yeah. So since our notion was there have to be some smaller, medium-sized businesses that are seeking to export their goods into the U.S. market. And if those goods require some type of connectivity to the Internet, whether it's Wi-Fi or LTE or 5G, it would make sense for us to embed our product into their product. So when they export to the U.S., they take that burden off the end user. You don't want to give a 70-year-old or an 80-year-old the task of hooking up to Wi-Fi.
Why are you looking at me when you say that?
in the same notion, you don't want to put the burden of charging, having someone in their 20s, 30s, 40s bill something else to their AT&T or Verizon account.
Yeah.
So it should just come embedded. And so we went with
what
that
a
notion.
Clever idea, because this might get it's going to get added to, it's one of these Internet of Things coming over. And it's going to get hooked up. And if this isn't just a business to consumer, this is probably business to business kind of products here that are put somewhere into some link, into some chain of things, office, industrial, manufacturing, somewhere this thing is going to sit and connect to the overall Internet of Things that this company has put together. And why not make it fit easily?
Yeah, well, I'd like to tell you about one which is still in development with an organization called Comapper out of Seoul. We met them on one of the Korea trip. So we went. It was an amazing trip. We'll get back to that later. But we were fortunate enough to have four one-on-one meetings that were set up. I don't mean meetings, but four different sessions with different entities.
Which they set up for free for you guys, right? As part of this thing. You pay to go, but whatever the cost is to go. But the rest, they do all the work to connect you with all these people.
It was amazing. The match, yes, the answer is yes. And they did this in tandem with the Korean Chamber of Commerce. That was the Korea outreach arm. But there's a company called Comapper, who they have a drone that is automated. The first flight has to be piloted, but the second one is automated. And the challenge that they have is that there's a lot of, they would store the data on an SD card. And so now I've got your drone, I have an SD card, and now I have to have one of my people grab this tiny little quarter inch by half inch card,
right,
and stick it into my computer to download all the data. To me, that's a clunky solution.
Right.
And so our suggestion was, why don't you embed our SIM
And maybe they don't do it right away. They pull it out and we'll set it down there. Oops, where'd that card go?
You know how many cards I lose? I don't know about you, but if the wind blows.
If you don't do it that second and stick it in there, now there's a card floating in the wind somewhere here.
Yeah, or if you put it on the desk, and if your desk looks like mine, you'll never see it
again. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, so our suggestion was use our embed our SIM or embed our solution, and we'll transmit that to your cloud for a minor fee. This way, it's instantly accessible by your end users.
One less thing to fail. I use triple recording in this thing because somehow the card literally failed. Not often, but once a year or something, I pull it out and I go, well, I guess I got to get a new one of those cards. I know now, thank God I recorded it up with a backup because otherwise I would have lost this recording because I was relying on that little plastic SIM card there.
Yeah, so I've had that happen to me as well, Paul. And so this company, CoMapper, really does infrastructure, buildings, bridges, but there's an application as well for lots, you know, of material, sulfur lots, lots of rock, lots of feed. There's applications there. So that's still in development, but this is just one application where we were.
So on a whim, you sit in on a call, suddenly it sparks your imagination, you go back to your team and says, maybe we should go. Was it expensive? I don't know, it was a couple $1,000 probably or something to fly there, go there.
Oh, it was a little bit more than that. It was a package deal. Okay. I'm not sure if I should relate.
But it wasn't like millions of dollars or something.
It was reasonable. Yeah. It was reasonable. And the return on it, while it's still pending, I found a great deal of value in there. Not just exposure to the culture and industry, but a great deal of value.
Let's break down that value. Is it just eye-opening possibilities we got to pursue? Or is it tangible results, like this CoMapper, we actually met somebody that now we're in discussion with that we would have never met before? Or is it something else? Is it just exploration, R&D? Oh, they're doing stuff over there we hadn't thought about. Maybe we should be working on this, or we should find a way to link with this, or whatever. Is it just simply exploration and a thing? Is it just education and eye-opening? Or is it actual partnerships, discussions? It sounds like in your case at least one of them.
Yeah, again, all of the above, Paul, all of the above. And then I'll add a fourth dimension, which was at the cultural level. Again, if I can entertain you with a short story.
Please. So, we love stories.
Yeah, we, at least speaking from my group here, we did not go in with any specific expectations. We were hopeful that we would be able to land one or two partners. And besides CoMapper, we're in dialogue with a company called Infranix right now. That's positive, but we had no other expectations. And the trip blew us away. When I say us, I don't mean me and my collective sales. I'm talking about the other business owners,
because there's a whole bunch of you guys that flew over there together.
Yeah, it blew us away. Korea as a whole, they've grown a lot since the 1980s.
I've never been to Korea. I hear about Korea, but
oh, it's amazing. So they, their GDP was at 65 billion in the 1980s. And it's grown to, I believe it's 1.6 trillion, you know, as of 2020. So a 40-year span.
One of those Asian tigers that took off here.
Yeah, it was a huge growth rate. And the majority of this is based on industry, primarily technology and automobiles, shipmaking, those big ones. Again, we didn't go with any expectation. And what we found was a culture that is very proud, number one, hardworking, good work ethic, and a very clean city.
I'd expect that.
I didn't either.
You think China's pollution and dirty, and it might be more modern, but they're not as, I guess I wouldn't picture this. I hear Singapore is incredibly clean, but I wouldn't think of other places.
I'm told China's pretty clean as well now, as opposed to, you know, a few decades ago. But Seoul, apparently, we struggle to try to find a trash can because they recycle everything. We literally just kept our trash list until we got back to the hotel. But they've been recycling since the 90s, and you'd be hard-pressed to find it.
And I'm hearing other things where, like, they're ahead of us in terms of cellular phones, better service, bigger data, and other things. Somehow we think we got the biggest and the best everywhere, but I'm hearing that they're, I don't know if that's true or not, but that they're just things like their technology infrastructure in some ways is ahead of us.
In some ways it is. In some ways it is, but it also is supported by the government. And there's a public-private partnership. I'm not sure exactly how the government is supporting it, but it's my understanding there are some incentives to lenders, some incentives to investors, and some tax incentives.
So you're impressed by the place?
I was impressed with their overall adoption and entrepreneurship at every level that we met with.
So here's the last two questions, because we could go on and on. We've already gone over our usual allotted time, but this is so fascinating to talk about.
I have so much more to tell you.
I know. We may have to have you come back. One is the question I have. Did you really think, because you're, I don't know what size business you are, or you're a mid-sized business. I take it you're not a giant. Give me a rough size of how big you guys are.
We're 1 to 1.5 mil. We're not huge.
Okay. I wouldn't think most 1 to 1.5 mil businesses sitting in Orange County would think, I can do business elsewhere in the world. I don't speak the language. I don't understand the rules. I don't know how to meet these people or talk to these people or understand the different business cultures and how to interact and how to transact business and money and things and stuff. Somehow I just don't think I can be there. I might want to be there, but I don't. My first reaction is I can't. Did you have that kind of reaction?
Not at all. When it was the way it was presented by Manal and her team, everything was within reach.
Yeah.
They you know, the SBDC, they're not an entity that would do all the work for you, but they will connect you to all the different entities that will help you be successful. No, not at all. We've been liaising with the SBDC for a few years now, and I entrust a lot of faith in what they can bring forward. When it was brought to us forward that, hey, this is an opportunity, it was worth exploring. There was no concern that we couldn't do it. The focus was more.
And what would you say to people who might not know this service even exists, that there are things like the SBDC that organize this stuff for free, that's part of their mandate, that's part of why they're being supported by the SBDC and the state of California and various other groups that support them to try and encourage import or export, to try and engage local businesses with overseas partners and see if we can't grow both sides of the equation here?
I would say contact your local SBDC. Go to Google, type in SBDC and make the outreach. There are resources that assist with finance, not financing, but they also have financing.
They do here. We've had the finance center in this building here. We've had them on where they'll help you go find loans or grants or money. They'll act as your free insurance agent, person to go shop around for you here and tell you if you're qualified and what you're not qualified for and how to get qualified and all this other stuff. But they have this other component that connects what I would say is regular, ordinary businesses with overseas opportunities. They happen to be focusing on Korea at the moment, but they've done others.
Yep.
And I'm just blown away by that because I don't think I can do business in Korea.
That's Manal's section. And if it wasn't for the SBDC bringing this opportunity, we would likely be just as reticent as you were saying.
And wouldn't even think about it. I'm not even going to go waste my time and try and fly over there and just wander around and see who I can talk to. How am I even going to talk to them?
Yeah. But when someone says, hey, listen, Nigel, we're going to set you up with some matchmaking. We'll have 3 to 5 different sessions. You'll have likely an average of 2 to 10 or 2 to 10 meetings.
Right. One-on-one.
Why would I not say no?
Yeah. Why would you not say yes? Right. Yeah.
That's what I meant. Why would I not say yes? I mean, they're presenting this. All the research is done up front. It's amazing.
If you'll pay to fly over here and whatever the cost is of lodging and airfare and stuff here, we will enter. You don't have to wander around and knock on doors and try and get an interpreter to tell people why you're here. You have a meeting already set up for you that they've researched and said, this seems like a good partnership, a potential partnership.
Yes, and we got to stay in one place, in 4 different places, and these opportunities came to us. It was a huge
companies
value.
And Korea are just as eager to do business here and just as uncertain how to make those connections. If the SBDC can, through its resources, match, make, put people together, and give you a firsthand way to fly there, see it, experience it, talk to them, put them together. I'm still old school. If we can just sit down face to face, it's a whole different feeling like coming in here than if we just do this over Zoom. I'm supposing they can do some of this over Zoom and you'll follow up with Zoom, but I just think it's an amazing resource that nobody knew. When they told me about what they're doing, taking regular businesses over to meet other regular businesses over there with the potential to match make and put you together with real people, not just take you on a trade mission. You have a dinner, you meet the trade minister. He says, I hope we can do business with you. You fly home and you say, that was fun. Maybe someday it'll turn into something. You went there with a real specific agenda. You told the SBDC, they found you real partners and you had real conversations.
Exactly.
Wow.
Exactly. And on top of that, we got to hang out with some high quality people for about a week and a half.
All right, last chance to tell us one last story. You said you got lots of them. Pick one. What are we going to leave with here? We spent probably too much time talking about the Internet of Things, but I think it's fascinating, and then trying to understand how you fit into that, and then specifically why you chose to go to Korea and what you got out of it. That was my agenda for today. Anything else you want to throw into this equation here?
Well, I do want to once again give props to the SBDC, specifically Roger and Manal.
Roger,
and Mike.
We're giving you a shout out here.
Yeah, and Mike.
Manal and Mike, yeah.
They're amazing. I also want to give credit to the, and I believe the group is, the Orange County Korean Chamber of Commerce.
There's something else, too. They're the ones that brought this whole trade, whatever they called it, where they brought at the convention center here, and they brought tons of Korean businesses over to this. Something had only been held, this giant world trade fair kind of thing, trade event, and they brought it, they won the contract and got it to come for the first time ever to the United States and specifically to Orange County.
I think it was at the Anaheim Convention Center.
It was.
Yeah.
And they put that on. So it's not just flying us there, it's flying them here. And that's amazing. I had no idea until that how much business we do with Korea and how many different things, not just food or boy bands. That's all I hear about is Korean food and boy bands. But
oh, don't forget the Korean skincare for the ladies.
Skincare there, apparently
big,
huge
big
and all that
deal.
Kind of stuff here. But cars, they start talking about all these other electronics and all those things. I mean, I said, yeah, I guess I don't think of Korea. I think of Mexico. I think of Canada. I think of Europe. I don't necessarily, China certainly, I don't necessarily think of Korea. And it's a huge, one of our huge trading partners here.
Yeah. Like I said, I just want to give credit to them. It was it was just a great trip. It opened my eyes to a lot of things. Made some, hopefully, lifelong connections, ranging from education. We met with Anil and Sri from the Department of Economics and Business at Cal State Fullerton. I met Ash, CEO of a local bank, Shant over at Anaheim, and then several business owners. There was Amy, a baker, there's Sal.
Other people went with you on the trip.
Yeah, Terry, he owns a goods company, mainly beauty goods, purses, accessories, I should say. And then Sal has a landscape construction company. So it was a good
construction
mix.
Again, I'd love to hear why that person went to Korea, what they thought they were going to get out of it. But apparently they saw an opportunity and hopefully had some results out of this thing here.
Yeah. So it's my understanding Manal and company are planning a trip to Vietnam next year.
Oh, that would be cool, too. I don't know why I find that. I'm just of the era. I remember, unfortunately, the Vietnam conflict or whatever they call it here now.
Yeah, the euphemism of the conflict. Yeah.
The conflict.
Yeah.
But anyway, I'm just fascinated by, I don't think Orange County businesses, regular businesses, mid-sized businesses, even big businesses, tend to think of selling the products elsewhere. Too complicated, language, currency, laws, customs. I don't know how to go there. I don't know how to meet them. I don't know how to transact the business. And yet there are huge entities here like the SBDC and several others that are all trying to instigate this, trying to promote it. We can sell our stuff there. They can sell their stuff here, and we both benefit. But you need a partner, just like I need a partner in the IoT. I don't know how to put all this stuff together. I don't know how to get the data transmitted. I guess I got to manage. I need a managed service for that.
You have a partner right here, just sitting across the desk.
Yeah.
So you have one.
And I think in the same sense, you've got a partner now to manage that service, to manage that relationship for you. Maybe I'm making too much out of it here, but it's the same managed service idea. We know how this works. We'll plug you into it here.
Yep. I agree. SBDC has been amazing.
Cool. So. All right. Thank you so much for coming in today here. We hope you have a comeback. We'll give you more extended time. We already went way over our allotted time here, but what a cool conversation, and thanks for coming
Paul,
in.
Paul, thanks for asking us. Have a great day.
Okay.
Thanks.
As we conclude another episode of the Profit Talks podcast, we hope we've empowered your entrepreneurial spirit. Reach out to us to connect with our experts, and let's take your business to the next level. Keep those dreams alive, keep pushing forward, and stay tuned for more. And if you liked what you heard in today's podcast and you want your business to reach new heights, just contact us at profittalkspodcast.org or call us at 1-800-616-7232. That's 1-800-616-7232. So until next time, keep thriving.